Regardless of what you and I go through in this life, one thing I noticed, one thing I learned is always constant, doesn't change. Regardless of what you and I go through, one thing doesn't change is the presence of God in our midst, God's faithfulness to us. God is always going to be faithful. Right, last week I preached about his faithfulness in keeping his word, his faithfulness in keeping his promises. Remember the promises that he made to the Israelites. He said, I'm going to give you this land. And in the book of Joshua, we read about how Yahweh, the Lord, brought the Israelites to enjoy the inheritance because he already had told them 400 years before that I'm going to give your land to your descendants, Abraham. So when I was thinking about that, and just like it, almost like this sermon that I have today, it can be a sequel to what I preached about last week. Now, this reminds me of a text, Paul talking to his young protege, Timothy. 2 Timothy 2, 12 through 13, Paul says, if we endure, so in other words, if we endure any persecution, we endure any suffering, whatever it is that we have to endure, he says, if we endure, we will also reign with him, Christ. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. If we are unfaithful, he will always be faithful to us. You see, one of the things, like that's a constant. That's a one thing that will not change. God's faithfulness will always be. He will be, the Bible talks about that he's faithful from one generation to another because his faithfulness is everlasting. So we know, you can count on it, that he will be faithful. The question that you and I need to wrestle with is, how faithful am I going to be to him? You know, we're the ones who at times are not faithful to his word. We're the ones that at times are not faithful to his call. You see, and one of the things that through this text I learned, God will use circumstances. He will use situations in your life, in my life, and he will use people to test how faithful we'll be to him. God will use circumstances and people to prove how faithful you will be to him. So your faith in God will be tested. Your commitment to God will be tested. Even your love for God will be tested. How much do you truly, truly love God? You might claim that you love him, but you will not know how truly you love him until you go through a test. And so God will use circumstances in our own lives. He will use people surrounding us to test our faithfulness to him. See, God entered into a covenant with the nation of Israel. God is a God of covenant. He's a covenant-keeping God, promise-keeping God. See, he took the nation of Israel and says, if you obey me, he said to them, I will be your God and you will be my people. Even though the whole earth is mine, out of the whole nations, you will be to me a treasure possession. But if you obey me, you know, I'm going to take you from slavery, from Egypt, and I'm going to take you to a land that is very prosperous, a land flowing with milk and honey. That's how it's described in the Bible. So God kept his promise to the Israelites. You will be my people. Here's the covenant. You will be my people and I, Yahweh, will be your God. This is key for us to understand because in that society, you know, there was a polytheistic nation. A lot of people have multiple gods, deities, fertility gods. And now the Lord entered into this covenant relationship with Israel saying, if you are true to me, I will be your God and you will be my people. We're going to have this relationship together. You see, we read how God fulfilled his promise to his people in the book of Joshua. And I love the book of Joshua because you have this generation that truly, truly was faithful to God, the generation of Joshua. But then when we come to the book of Judges, everything changed. And I want to show you part of that in the book of Judges chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. This book, the book of Judges, it's not that big of a book. You can read it maybe in 20 minutes. This book highlights God's faithfulness, but it also highlights Israel's unfaithfulness to God. So you see that God's always faithful, Israel's unfaithful. And the Lord's still like, remember our relationship. So Israel's cheating on God, and the Lord's still faithful to him. So Judges chapter 2, let's go there. Let me just read five verses so you see what's going on, the context. Now, the Israelites are already in the land. They already have the inheritance. And so now, you know, Joshua's already dead. Everybody's going to go to their own territory. And look at what's going on in the second chapter in the book of Judges. This is what it says, reading from the ESV, the Blue Bible, in your chairs. Now the angel of the Lord went on from Gilgal to Bochim. And he said, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give to your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare to you. As soon as the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the people of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept, and they called the name of that place Bochim. And they sacrificed there to the Lord. Bochim means place of weeping. Now, from the beginning, chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, talks about the faithfulness of God. Notice it says, God says, I brought you out of Egypt, the land of slavery, and I already gave you the land that I swore to your ancestor to give. That's what you have right now. He said, I told you I will never break my covenant with you. But guess what? You broke it. Because it also highlights Israel's unfaithfulness in verse 2. Israel broke the covenant or agreement. A covenant is an agreement that you make, a pact with somebody. So Israel broke the agreement with God. How? Because it says they did not break the altars of those nations. In other words, breaking the altar means that you still were worshiping the gods of those nations around you. When you remember the first commandment, way before in Exodus, thou shalt not have any other gods before me. Don't make yourself an image. I, the Lord, am a jealous God. So we have this relationship, but then you go into the land, and there you're worshiping other gods, other deities. I say, I will not break my covenant with you, but you have broken. And then there was a consequence for Israel's disobedience. God said, verse 3, that he will not drive out the remaining nations that were in the land. Now, when Joshua conquered and brought the land, the Israelites, there were still some nations lingering around. Remember, we talked about in order for Israel to possess the land was already inhabited. So you need to kick those people out, and then it becomes your land. That's how it was in those days, even in the time of the Greeks. You conquer a nation, now they become your slave, and that's your nation. You take ownership of that. So the Israelites, I mean, remember we talked about there was the Canaanites and the Jebusites and many of those ites inhabiting the land. So the Lord said, I'm going to give that land to you, my people. But when Joshua conquered the majority of those nations, there were still nations around that the Israelites could not overpower. So the Lord said that they will be to you thorns in your sides, and their gods will be to you snare, a lure. So they're going to cause you to be, they're going to bring temptation so that you go and worship them. Because they failed, the Israelites failed to drive him out. Verse 4, they will. Verse 3, so I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare to you. And as soon as the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the people of Israel, the people lifted their voices because they knew exactly what that meant. It's like, you disobey me, and now you might have to deal with those nations around. You should have been at peace, but who knows what they're going to do to you. You violated the covenant. Now, it's interesting. When you keep on reading chapter 2, verses 6 through 10, you have an example of a faithful nation to God. And I want to read that portion right there because you have a contrast between a nation that was faithful to God and another one that was unfaithful to God. In fact, to the point that they forgot all about the Lord. And these are the ones, those who forgot all about the Lord, they are the ones to whom God is talking right now. Look at verse 6 through 10. This verse is like a parenthesis right here. When it says, Joshua's already gone, but it says right here, when Joshua dismissed the people of Israel, When Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went each to his inheritance to take possession in the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who has seen the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years. And they buried him with his within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. And all, I love this, verse 10, and all the generation were also gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord and the work that the Lord had done for Israel. I just read that and just to me it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because the Israelites were supposed to communicate the Lord, the law from one generation to another. Like, I mean, Deuteronomy chapter 6, it says, talk to your children when you wake up in the morning, when you go, tie it up in symbols so that everywhere you remind yourself of the Lord. And now we have in chapter 2, after Joshua is gone and all the elders are gone, another generation grew up who did not know the Lord. How is that possible? That you did not know the Lord, that you did not know what he did for you in Egypt, what he did for your great-great-granddaddies and your grandparents. You don't know what God has done for you? We have a new generation that did not have a foundation. And so from that moment on in the book of Josh, in the book of Judges, and then Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, the new generation. But you see, like I said, you have Israel served God throughout the lifetime of Joshua. And the elders. Josh, all those people are gone. And then now we have a new generation who is not serving the Lord. And the Lord is addressing them right here. Another generation who did not know God, who did not fear the Lord. And then when you go verses 11 through 15, here's an example of Israel's unfaithfulness. Listen to what he says right here. So there's a new generation, verse 11. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the people who were around them and bowed down to them. And they provoked the Lord to anger. They abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers or raiders who plundered them, and he sold them into the hand of their surrounding enemies so that they could not longer withstand their enemies. Whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them to harm, as the Lord had warned and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. So the book of Judges, that's very much what you... I wish that somebody would make a movie because that happens a lot. There's like about like 12 to 13 judges. And it's like that. Israel does evil. Here comes plunderers, raiders, thieves. And they just take everything. And then Israel's in distress. They pray to God and the Lord answers their prayer again. And so that's repeatedly. That's the whole story of the book of Judges. So they did evil in the sight of the Lord. How? By worshiping Baals or Baals, fertility gods. It says they abandoned the Lord, went after other gods. Keep this in mind. They're supposed to have a relationship with God, right? We have a covenant. I will be your God. You will be my people. You go because now you're surrounded for so many other gods, fertilities. You leave the Lord and you go after other gods. So they abandoned the Lord. They forsook the Lord after the Lord has been so good to them. And then he says that they provoked the Lord to anger. Verse 12. And what did the Lord do? Here's the punishment for the disobedience. The Lord delivered them into the hands of plunderers. Can you imagine that? You remember, we talked about how God fought the battles of Israel. And now God's hand will be against Israel. Why? Because Israel is in disobedience. So Israel could not stand, cannot withstand their enemies. Every time they went and fought some of those enemies, Israel would be defeated. Why? Because the Lord, I mean, it's almost like, okay, you got those gods? Let them save you now. And the Lord let Israel do what Israel wanted to do. So Israel could not withstand their enemies because the hand of the Lord now, instead of being with you, will be against you. But it's interesting because when you see all what's going on in the book of Judges, you still see the faithfulness of God. Because even though the Israelites are being plundered by, you know, raiders, and they come and take whatever they want and then kill some of your people, God will raise up a judge. That's what the book is called, the book of Judges, because there's so many judges. And by the way, one of those judges was even a woman named Deborah. God will raise up what you and I would call it a hero, a deliverer. And so that's what I picture. This is kind of like, man, he's like, trouble, we're in trouble, but we need a savior. We need somebody to come and rescue us from the villains, from the plunderers. So God will raise up a judge. Look at verse 16. Then the Lord, remember, verse 15 tells you that, you know, Israel was, you know, the hand of the Lord was against Israel and that they were in terrible distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of those who plundered them. Yet, verse 17, this Israel's unfaithfulness again, yet they did not listen to the judges. For they whored after other gods. They prostituted themselves after other gods, bowing down to them. They soon turned aside from the way in which their fathers had walked, who had obeyed the commandments of the Lord, and they did not do so. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity or compassion by the groaning because of those who afflicted and oppressed him. Verse 19. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers. Do you see that Israel going like, now you're here, now you're there, now you're here. And it's like, now, I mean, the Lord saved you. But you're saved now. You go back to the old, I mean, it says more corrupt ways. God saved, I mean, this, the love of God in the midst of disobedience, still amazing. He's still faithful. You're in distress, I send you a judge to save you. And he says that they were saved, but they would not listen to the judge. You see, Israel's not paying attention, disobedience, unfaithfulness to God. And then when the judge would die, they back to doing whatever bad things you were doing. And he says, the text says even worse, they were more corrupt. So like I said, God had to send in like about 12 to 13 judges, because 12 times at least Israel was being distressed. God saved them. Now they're saved. They're happy. They go back to be. And it's like that's the whole roller coaster of the nation of Israel during the time of the judges. Remember them named Samson? He was one of those judges. Samuel, Gideon, Ehud, and their names are right there. Now, because God was sick and tired of Israel's pattern of disobedience, this is what the Lord told them right here. Remember, we're supposed to be in a relationship. I'm supposed to be your one, but you go after all the people. You go after all the gods. And what happened to that? You will be my people. I will be your God. So here's what happened to the Israelites. Look at verse 20. Of chapter 2. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he said, because these people have transgressed my covenant that I commanded their fathers, and have not obeyed my voice, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations that Joshua left when he died, in order to test Israel by them, whether they will take care to walk in my way, to walk in the way of the Lord and as their fathers did, or not. So the Lord left those nations, not driving them out quickly, and he did not give them into the hand of Joshua. So the Lord left some of those nations. So here's the punishment of Israel's disobedience. God said, I will no longer drive out those nations that are around you. Like, Israel had the opportunity to be free from war. I mean, it's just like, but you failed God. And God said, there's still some nations around that you have not been able to conquer. Those are the ones that come and become plunderers against you. I will no longer drive them out. I'm going to use those nations to test you, to test your faithfulness to me. You see, when I was reading, I'm reading the book of Judges again, I had to pause, and that's where the sermon is coming about, because I'm thinking like, wow, like leaving the nation to test Israel's faithfulness. I will no longer drive out those nations that Joshua lived when he died. These nations, he said, those are the ones, he said, they will become thorns in on your side, and they will lure you or tempt you to go against God. See, God's going to use them to test Israel's faithfulness. I told you that God will use circumstances. He will use people to test how faithful we are to him. You know, I was wrestling with that. It's like, okay, what's going on here? You see, to see whether they will care to walk in the ways of the Lord as their fathers did. God uses situations. God uses people to test you and I to see how faithful we'll be to him. Let me say that another way. You and I will not know how faithful we are to God until you attempted to go against him. You and I will not know how faithful we are to him until we are tempted to go against God. The Israelites now are going to have plenty of opportunities to go against God through all those nations. So God said, I'm going to leave them around to see if they're going to really remember me and be loyal to me. You see, my friends, your faithfulness to God is more evident in the midst of possibility and temptation to go against God. That's how you're going to know how faithful you are. When there's a lot of possibilities that you can worship anybody else, but you say, no, I'm going to worship just Yahweh. So your faithfulness to God will be more evident, not necessarily in church, but when you are surrounded by wicked people, you're surrounded by anybody else that doesn't believe in God, and you still say, I still want to believe in him. I still believe he's my Lord. And even though you might worship whoever you want to do, I'm still going to worship God. And that's how your faithfulness is going to be tested. Somebody said it this way, the bravery of a soldier is only known in time of war. You know, a soldier is received a medal not because they were just going through training and things. No, it's after you have gone and fought the battle and you did not run away. You stood your ground. And now people say, we commemorate you because you're brave. How do we know how brave you are? You've shown it. So your faithfulness to God will be tested. It's going to be through the situation, through the circumstances. Faithfulness is only shown when you have more possibilities to go against God. Let me say it this way. Love is shown authentic. Love is shown authentic when a person could have the possibility to love anybody else they want, but they choose to love you. Think about that. Like, love. How do you know that person truly loves you? Because that person might have another guy that's more beautiful than the one you got, or a beautiful woman. He can have anybody else in the world, but he or she chooses just to love you. That's how love is going to be proven authentic. It's going to be shown. Love is shown authentic when a person could have the possibility to love anyone else in the world, but he or she chooses to love you. And you know you love by that person because you have a lot of possibilities. You can have it, but then you loving me. That's how the Israelites will know how truly they love God. Remember, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Now you're going to be loving so many other deities. Now I'm going to see you truly love me. In the midst of those deities that you say, make a conscious choice and says, I'm going to be loyal to the Lord. I'm going to be true to him. Somebody said, the author Mark Gunger, he's the author of a book, Laughing Your Way Into a Better Marriage. He said, true love cannot exist where there are no rules. True love cannot exist where there are no rules. You see, God gave the Israelites rules because he loved them. The commandments to love God only and to worship him only. That was the rule. That was the covenant. Now the Israelites will have a possibility. They have an opportunity to show God truly that they love him, being true to those rules that the Lord said. Worship me. You have so many God. Everybody has a God around here in this neighborhood. But you're going to say, no, I'm going to stick with my God, with the Lord. You see, the people around those nations that the Lord left, they worship so many man-made gods, deities. And the Lord said, but you are, don't make yourself an idol. This is the law. You and I have a covenant. Now you get to prove your love for me. How would you know Israel was loyal to God? If Israel will only love God in the midst of everybody else who was loving something else. But Israel said, no, we're not going to worship your gods. We're going to stick with the Lord. That's how you're going to prove your love for the Lord. I mean, Jesus one time said, if you love me, you will obey my commandments. That's how we know. That's how we show God that we love him. Will Israel love God only, or will Israel compromise his love for God because there are so many lovers around now? Will Israel be loyal to God in the midst of so many other gods? See, it reminds me, 1 Peter 1:7, when he talks about that even our faith in God is tested. The word for faith can also be faithfulness. And Peter talks about that your faith, the trials that we go through, the suffering we go through, is to test how faithful we are to God, how strong our faith is. And he says our faith goes through those trials, but at the end of those trials, when you have overcome and you come even shinier because now you realize you withstood the test, you passed it, and you're still faithful to the Lord. So Peter said those things will come to prove how genuine your faith is. So now Israel has a chance to prove how genuine the relationship with God is going to be because they're surrounded by nations. The Lord said, I won't drive those nations. I'm going to leave them around to test how faithful you will be to me. Like I said, God used circumstances. He will use people to test how faithful we'll be to him. Now, chapter 3 will give us the name of those nations. Go with me now, chapter 3, 1 through 6. It says, now these are the nations that the Lord left to test Israel by them. That is, all in Israel who had not experienced all the wars in Canaan. Verse 2, it was only in order that the generations of the people of Israel might know war, to teach war to those who had not known, to those who had not known it before. These are the nations, the five lords of the Philistines and all the Canaanites, the Sidonians and the Hivites, who lived on Mount Lebanon from Mount Baal Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. They were for the testing of Israel to know whether Israel will obey the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. So the people of Israel lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. There's a lot of ites in here. And their daughters they took for themselves for wives, and their own daughters they gave to the sons, and they served their gods. You see what's going on here? The Israelites, they were compromising their love for God because now we're intermarrying with those nations. You know, it's almost like what Solomon got in trouble with those many wives he had because he said, well, we worship our God, so if you love me, you will be on altar for me, right? And they're okay, and then Solomon now again, you go and worshiping God because the one that, you know, the women are pulling you away. And Israel lived among all those names you see in there. Some of those names are very scary, like the Hittites. I mean, you can Google Hittites. Man, everyone was intimidated by the Hittites, you know. It's like when you hear the word Al-Qaeda or something, like, you don't want to mess with the Hittites. You know, and they're around Israel. And you got the Canaanites and the Sidonians, and, I mean, all those Jebusites and Perizzites. The Lord said, I'm going to leave those nations around to test how faithful you'll be to me. Now, but it's interesting because it says that God also was going to teach Israel war. So I had to pause for a moment. It's like, interesting. God's going to leave the nation to test their faithfulness, but he's going to leave those nations to teach Israel how to battle, how to engage in war. Why is that important? Keep in mind, the people who made the land, you know, their fathers were already gone. They're the ones who fought that war. You know, and so we have now the grandkids. They're enjoying the land. So the grandkids did not get to fight on the way to the promised land. So that now they were in the land enjoying the inheritance. They don't have experience about warfare. And what did the Lord say? I'm going to use this nation to teach Israel how to fight. The generation that was here, they had not experienced war. I mean, it's almost like, when the kids, I mean, sometimes kids don't know how hard you have to work to have what you have. Because now it's almost everything is given to them. Unless they learn how to work, they will adapt this mentality of everything is owned to me. The Lord said, no, I'm going to teach him warfare now. How? You might have to fight those nations. So the Lord said to teach, let me just read that again. Verse 2. It was only in order that the generations of the people of Israel might know war, to teach war to those who had not known it before. And these are the names of those nations. So the Lord led those nations to test Israel's faithfulness, but also to teach Israel how to engage in conflict or warfare. Because some of those people who made it, they already have the inheritance. The inheritance, that means that we're enjoying the fruit of our labor. There's no conflict. And if you don't have conflict, you would not know how to resolve it. You see, a lot of times there are people that run away from conflict. And if you don't stop to deal with that conflict, you will always find yourself in conflict. So the Israelites, it's like, here's an opportunity now with those nations, those Jebusites. You guys might have to learn war. You're going to have to fight them. How do you learn war? Fighting. You know, because they had not known. They never experienced warfare. Now God's going to use that to teach them to them. God led those nations to test Israel's faithfulness, but also to teach Israel, since they had not experienced warfare. Now, God will use situations and people to teach us something that we have not yet learned. This is really the thrust of the sermon. God will use situations and people in our lives to teach us lessons that we have not yet learned. You know, and the Israelites have not learned warfare. There's plenty of people that you can fight against now, so you'll be trained. God will use the surrounding people, you know, to teach Israel. You know, when I was thinking about this, you know how many times we pray for patience, one. And you know, it's like, God's not going to give you patience. You can pray for patience all you want. He's not going to give it to you. You know what he will give you? People that are hard to deal with, so that you'll be patient. God's been testing my patience this week. I go to the gas station on Forest Avenue the other day, and it's just like, I get it, Lord. Maybe that's where the sermon came. You know, it's almost like, they're busy, everybody's pumping gas, and there's a guy, Middle Eastern or something, he, you know, there's two pumps. He parked the car that you cannot have access to the other one. So he's over there. I come in here, and I realize I don't have any room. So he sees that I have that struggle. No, but he's just over there, like, looking at me. So we have a stare contest. He's looking at me, I'm looking at him. Part of me, I'm thinking like, dude, really? Couldn't you just move the car a little bit so I can just get the hose? And, you know, but he's there looking at, and I'm just in the car, I'm just waiting. And it's like, you know, a lot of things can come in my mind right there. Maybe a lot of words that you might want to tell him, get out. It's like, would you just please move your car a little bit? I mean, you don't have to just come in the middle of the island. I mean, we have space for both, but, you know, I'm sitting in the car. He's still there. And then, you know, I'm saying, we're busy. Let me just wait. So I stay there. And then he's done. And then he takes his time, opens the doors of the car, start cleaning the car. Mind you, gets the garbage out, and then comes, dumps the garbage into the trash can. And now he gets in the car, and now he's looking for the seatbelt. You know, just, and I'm just, I just like, I realized, Lord, I think I'm passing the test, because, you know, I'm just like, okay. We have a stare contest again. Like, and then slowly I said, you know, I'm not going to back up. You either going to back up because I'm coming. And then finally he slowly gets out, and I just come, and now I'm going to pump my gas. But I realized, like, you know, it's like testing my pace, like situations in which you might have to be patient. You know, at that moment, some people struggle with swearing. Like, what is this guy? You got to be stupid, man. Seriously. But it's like, calm down. Let it just, you know, sometimes I'm driving too. It's like, here we go. Now I'm following an ice cream truck, and he's really going slow, and I need to go get my daughter from school. And it's like situations in which God will use to teach us patience, to teach us warfare. That's what I'm saying. Like, even when we go through conflict, my friends, conflict is not bad, because you learn how to resolve conflicts later on. Situation we find ourselves in. And I think the more that we don't learn how to deal with this conflict, the more conflicts we will have in this life. Because God, you will use that so that we learn and that we be more mature, more seasoned to resolve those issues. You know how it is? Sometimes people they run away from conflict. They run away, and then they go somewhere else, and guess what's going to be waiting for them there? Conflict. Let me say this another way. You know how sometimes people will leave a church? Because, well, they had a problem with a Jebusite in the church. Oh man, I just have a problem with a brother. I gotta go somewhere. So people leave a place because they don't want to deal with the Canaanites. They go to a different place, and guess who's gonna be waiting for them there? The Perizzites. Because God says you had to deal with the Canaanites here, so that I can nurture you, so that I can prepare you. Because if you don't deal with the Canaanites, the Philistines are gonna be waiting wherever you go. Because God says you had to learn how to deal with the conflict. Running away is not dealing with it. Ignoring it is not dealing with it. It's like stay there and find out through the Lord how we're gonna deal with that. So people that wanna avoid conflict, notice that they always in conflict. Because we have to learn how to deal with that. So the Israelites use those nations to teach. Now, the Lord uses nations to teach Israel warfare because they had not learned it yet. It took 12 to 13 judges, and finally, they got to learn. Now, think about this. This is like 200 years later. There's a man named David. Guess who had to come? Guess who David had to fight? Remember the Philistines? It says right here, five lords of the Philistines. Makes you wonder why David got five stones when he went to face Goliath. It's almost like one for each of those lords of the Philistines. And David is the one that eliminated all the Philistines. I mean, one time the Philistines came and stole the Ark of the Covenant of God. I mean, they're still dealing with that. But David finally brought peace. I mean, that's a lot of training from here all the way to the time of David. But the Israelites, you know, fighting wars against those nations. See, my friends, what am I talking to you about today? God has a plan, even through the conflict that you and I experience in this life. There's still a plan. There's still something to learn from that. Church will go through conflicts. But when we go through those conflicts and things, I notice that some of us are more seasoned, more mature for the next one. Because there's another one coming. We don't know when, but like you're now more prepared to deal with whatever it is that's going to come because God's utilizing circumstances and people to teach us something that we have not learned yet. He's using even the conflict to develop us into a more seasoned, more mature Christian. God is using those nations to test the faithfulness of Israel. And he's using them also to teach Israel something that they had not learned. Just like he will use situations and circumstances in our life to test how faithful we're going to be to God. How faithful will you be to God when you are in the midst of that storm, that conflict? How faithful will you be to God when everybody else, your friends now, pulling you in the wrong direction, when they think you're nuts, that you call yourself a Christian? How faithful will you be to him? See, we know that God is always going to remain faithful. The question that you and I will have to wrestle always is, how faithful am I going to be to him? Knowing that he will use my situation, my circumstances, and even the people around me, even those people that I might not like too much, to teach me something that I have not learned. And so when we operate like that, we realize that God has a plan in everything that we go through. He's still God. He's still faithful. And even though we go through, even though we deal with Jebusites and Canaanites around us, there's always something to learn. Because God is not done. He's preparing us for the next level. Remember, one time the Israelites didn't have to fight any more wars during the time of David. But it took a long time from Judges to David. That was conflict after conflict and battles after battle. And finally, when David decided to build the temple, by the way, you know what it was? Because he was enjoying his palace. There was peace and quiet. No more conflict. But he learned all that. You know, he had to learn all that through that time. And now the Lord gave him rest. God will give us rest when we have mastered those lessons that he wants us to learn. But he's not done with us. He's going to test. He's going to prove how faithful we will be to him, even in the midst of the conflict. Let's pray.